This being the first show of the week, we begin, as always, with Australian politics and Anna Henderson, Chief Political Correspondent with SBS. Anna, petrol.
Well, firstly, David, you've reminded me about daylight savings, so you've already done me a service this evening. So
I've done all listeners a service.
I always discover it too late.
Well, get with it, as we say. Now, Anna, on the petrol question. Mm. Now, let's go through this. Take me through it. There is no problem with petrol supply at the moment, correct? All the petrol that's ever been coming to Australia is coming to Australia.
So even though there was a concern about what would happen with the Strait of Hormuz and petrol supply to Australia, whether the flow into the country would be reliable, the Prime Minister says there's actually more petrol coming into Australia now than there would normally be. So globally for Australia, in terms of the intake of fuel that we would expect, we are not in a shortage. But the problem is the distribution of fuel across the country, and also the reality that so many industries are incredibly reliant on fuel. And so there's a panic happening in the community, and anyone who has been able to get more fuel early has done that.
Yeah.
Big business, big agricultural companies have done that. And so there's sort of very delicate balance in a country that doesn't have big long-term onshore fuel supplies has been put completely out of whack. And of course, at the same time, the prices have surged. And this is the predicament that the government has now found itself in.
Yes, but they've now effectively cut the price of petrol by, 26 cents a litre or something like that. And and that's going to increase demand. So the problem is a demand problem, but the problem is going to be exacerbated by this cut.
This is the conundrum, and this is the issue that the government has been grappling with and that the cabinet has been grappling with. And we're only a few months out from the budget, which is already under immense pressure over the kind of unpredictable nature of what's happening in the Middle East. And then on top of everything else, yes, we've had an announcement today that for 3 months the fuel excise will be halved, and that will cost the budget $2.5 billion. It also means that the government looks like it's following the opposition, because last week this is what Angus Taylor actually called for. But at the same time, the politics of this and the feeling out there in kind of voter land has been judged to be red hot, and that the government has to make an effort to try and alleviate the pressure on people. But as you say, there is this issue that it's potentially going to push up the demand for fuel. And if it does that, and then it leads to increases in inflation, and then that leads the Reserve Bank to consider more interest rate rises, you can see how what people might think they're getting in terms of a saving at the petrol pump will be just taken away from them very soon in terms of their mortgage repayments.
You would think under these circumstances that the Australian Prime Minister would rage at the President of the United States for putting us into this shit. But there was Anthony Albanese on the 7:30 report, or 7:30 as we call it these days, so careful not to criticise Donald Trump. It's kind of a bit embarrassing in the end, isn't it?
I think that there are many people who are close watchers and analysts of the relationship and Australia's position who, you know, I would say the sort of geopolitical movers and shakers who have positions on all of this. Not all of them, certainly, but some who I think are trusted by the Prime Minister that he seeks counsel from, who have encouraged him to take a very careful position. When you look at what the UK leader Keir Starmer has said, what Mark Carney has said, the Canadian leader, I think you would say both of them have at times been more robust in their criticism of Donald Trump. And on this most recent front, Australia has seemed to take a very careful and cautious approach in terms of responding to what's happening in the US. And some of the press conferences and pronouncements from the president have kind of sent a chill down the spine of many watching this to know where it's going to end. And the Prime Minister continues to be extremely careful, so much so that today when he said he wanted more certainty from the US on its objectives, it was, you know, one of the strongest things he's said in recent weeks. And that's despite the fact that behind the scenes, Australia faces this incredible pressure on the, you know, on the budget, on the economic future of the country, which is being completely triggered by the actions of Donald Trump alongside, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu in the decisions they've made to go on the attack.
So when we look across the spectrum, we have one nation absolutely barracking for the war, couldn't be happier with the war. We have the coalition calling for the full backing of the war. The only person at the moment who is seems to be taking a somber, measured approach to the war is Andrew Hastie.
It is, when you look at the way Andrew Hastie has spoken, what he said on the weekend on Insiders, which has gained a lot of attention, is in no way the first time he's raised some of these concerns about Donald Trump, but it was one of the biggest audiences he's ever had on that front. And it certainly was one time where we got to see how different someone with a military background who doesn't have to be a leader but can speak as a member of an opposition can have a different point of view. But I think it was also from Andrew Hastie and the way he talked about the US and the way he talked about his concerns with the war, a real shot to the arm of some of his supporters to say there is a different way to do politics and he's prepared to do that and he's sort of building that momentum within the Liberal Party to maybe be an alternative to Angus Taylor at some time down the track, which you know he has ambitions to do with a different type of politics.
But it struck me as being bigger than that, that he had dignity in what he was saying. Even if you didn't agree with what he was saying about the war, he said it with candour and dignity and a lack of obfuscation, which of a kind that we're so used to all the time. And what's more, Anna, he was speaking for over 60% of Australians who want Australia to have nothing whatever to do with this war. Now, why can't our leaders talk like that?
Well, I think the nature of the alliance with the US is tricky because there is a president in the White House at the moment who is engaging in some fairly unexpected decision-making that has really deeply unpopular in parts of the Australian public, that's for sure. And, you know, if our leaders are telling the full nature of their engagement, who didn't consult with any allies before taking what many would say is, you know, extraordinary action in the Middle East to begin this conflict directly with Iran and promise, you know, regime change and encourage the Iranian people to rise up. And obviously that hasn't happened. So I see how you're reading it and that Andrew Hastie does come across as a quite a genuine voice in all of this and someone who is calling it, you know, in a particular way that has a lot of traction. There is a strong view for those who are inside the diplomatic world that you can't enrage, criticise or ridicule Donald Trump and have a long-term relationship with the president. This is someone who's in power until 2029 under the current, you know, US election. He's the elected leader of the country. It's not a situation where those who are, you know, weighing their options around how to deal with this president necessarily think that the best approach is to really call him out or to cut across his message. But, you know, I'm doing in answering your question, I guess, is saying that I've asked some of these same questions. Why isn't Australia more robust in its position? And what I've been told is that's just really not the way you do diplomacy with the Trump administration and get whatever else you need out of the alliance. Yeah. What if there's something down the track with Taiwan, with China, where Australia needs the US to step in? What happens then if there is, you know, a rift in the relationship?
Yeah. Now, look, Andrew Hastie had more to say than just talking about the war. This was a remarkable audition piece on Insiders. He also spoke about the willingness to be open-minded about increasing taxes on gas exports, about winding back capital gains tax discounts, to taking a look at negative gearing concessions. All of these are popular issues with Australian people. But The response from Angus Taylor was to slap him down. Who is Angus Taylor talking for here?
It is an interesting question, but I think there's something that's been slightly missed in this conversation because on the one hand, yes, Angus Taylor today in his remarks very much was trying to assert his dominance as the policymaker within the opposition and that he doesn't want to see, you know, the approach that Andrew Hastie has taken in discussing these topics be seen as, you know, a shift in Liberal policy. He's wanting to make it clear that Andrew Hastie might be saying these things and he may have some within the Liberal Party who are open to that, but the Liberal Party itself hasn't had this dramatic policy shift to suddenly be on the same page as potentially, you know, the Greens and others who've been pushing for some of these changes. However, I think in the background of this almighty reckoning that's happening within the Liberal Party about what it stands for, what its future is, who it's speaking to, is the fact that One Nation is ahead in the polls, has this groundswell of public support and the sort of protest vote at the moment, and is building momentum. It's on the up and up and up. And my understanding is that behind the scenes, some of the big money donors are looking towards One Nation now and thinking, is One Nation the party that I want to park my donation with, my money with, my investment with? And are they the party that could actually deliver on what I want to see policy-wise? So Angus Taylor has to make a judgment about how he's going to approach, you know, thorny policy issues for the Liberal Party in a way that doesn't just push some of those donors to go elsewhere or some of those backers who have deep pockets and the kind of people you need to run a successful election campaign.
But he's slapping Hastie down on the same day that the Australian Financial Review publishes a new poll which shows the position of the coalition to be almost a joke. Labor now trounces the coalition, absolutely trounces the coalition on cost of living, on housing affordability, which is what Hastie was talking about, on healthcare, even on immigration. And yes, One Nation has shown this extraordinary rise, but basically this is a fight with Labor. And on everything Hastie touched on, the coalition is being trounced by the government, and yet he is shut up.
Well, we'll see. I understand there was a phone call today between the pair in the wake of these different positions being put forward. And we'll see where it goes from here. I mean, it doesn't look good for the opposition leader to have such a divergence of opinion in his ranks within his front bench at this early point. But at the same time, you know, Angus Taylor's only been in this job for a relatively short time. And yes, the polls are looking terrible, but I think many of the people around him want to give him more time to see how he can introduce himself to the electorate, how he can deal with the budget in May. I think there's an appetite to give him more time. And while it is absolutely correct to say that particularly on the gas front and on some of these questions around, you know, how the economy has seemingly rewarded some of the most, you know, wealthy big businesses and at the, you know, appearing to be at the expense of the rest of the country. Like, that conversation is live and active, and it's as live and active on your show, David, as it is on TikTok. And like, these are cut through issues.
Anna, thanks so much. Anna Henderson, Chief Political Correspondent with SBS. Thanks for joining us once again on Late Night Live.